Center, KNUS.
A man walks down the street. He says, why am I soft in the middle?
Singing Paul Simon, you can call me Al, or in the case of Cassius Clay, you can call me Al Lee. And people learned to say Ali, and I pity the fool who called him Cassius Clay toward the end. I think a man has a right to do what he wants with his life. Muhammad Ali had a fascinating life, so has Mitch McConnell. This is a guy who wanted to be a U.S. senator, and he wanted to be a Senate majority leader, and darned if he didn't accomplish both. Now, that doesn't mean everybody loves him, including the President of the United States, who uses him as a regular laugh line.
Why don't you get a drink with Mitch McConnell, they ask. Really? Why don't you get a drink with Mitch McConnell?
Mitch McConnell can be our guest after the next break, and he's got thick skin. I've read his book, and it's a good one. It's called The Long Game, and I learned a lot about the guy, including the fact that even though he's going to be in the lawyer's lounge, he really didn't like being a lawyer. That's a shame. You know, my father was a lawyer. He worked in downtown Denver. So was my grandfather, Harry, who worked in the Sims building, which is right next to the university building, which is where William Crowe Jewelers is and was. Even back in the day when my grandpa was practicing law on 16th Street, it wasn't a mall back then. There, just half block away, was William Crowe Jewelers. William Crowe started in 1924. They've seen it all come and go, and that explains a lot about their success. First of all, how do you last that long without giving people what they want? It's only been through two families in that time. It's a family-owned business, and it gives people what they want. Great jewelry at the right price. The customer service is outstanding. And I'm telling you, Father's Day is coming up. Do you know when Father's Day is? You don't? Well, let me tell you, it's June 19th. You know what fathers like for Father's Day? I can tell you, a wristwatch would be nice. How about one that's engraved saying, you're the best dad ever, or thank you for being there for me? Whatever you give him, he's going to wear it. And you know what? As in the case of my father's watch that I have on my wrist right now, it can be passed down for generations. Doesn't have to break the bank either. Of course, at William Crowe Jewelers, they have some diamond-encrusted watches that cost many thousands of dollars, but they have some other gorgeous watches that cost a few hundred bucks. Why don't you get down to 16th and Champa, free validated parking across the street. You can check out what I'm talking about online at williamcrowe.com. Their phone number, 303-592-1695. When you go in and look around, it's nice if you tell them Craig sent you. They are William Crowe Jewelers, making Denver sparkle since 1924. Tom, talk to me. You're on 710 KNUS. Thanks for calling.
Well, thanks for having me, Craig. Why, you stole my thunder a little bit with that the Trump analogy. You know, people remember things they did with their dad. And with me and my dad, the biggest thing I remember is watching the fights on the Gillette Cavalcade of Sports. I watched the fights with him, you know, since I was a little tiny kid. And I saw Muhammad Ali fight back when he was a young boxer, when he was Cassius Clay. And I didn't like him. I really didn't like him. He, you know, in boxing, you're supposed to protect yourself at all times.
But right, he dropped his hands and dared people to hit him in the face, and people couldn't do it. He was too quick.
That's right, right. And then, you know, he'd dance around the ring, and you're not supposed to do that. You're supposed to get in there and fight. I remember my dad saying, you know, get in there and fight, get in there and fight, you know, and he'd dance around. And then that rope-a-dope thing that he used to do, that's not something you would do. And so,
right,
yeah,
it's sort of like Donald
like
Trump, and that's another Trump analogy. They're doing it in a totally different way than anybody in their profession has done it before.
Right. And he was also, you know, he was a bragger. And then he would mock his opponents. And that's not a gentlemanly thing.
He would ridicule his opponents. Right. Did he ever grow on you? Did you ever learn to like him?
Well, he was the greatest heavyweight fighter ever. I mean, he was absolutely the best.
Well, you don't know. Did you ever see the Manasseh Mahler from Colorado, Jack Dempsey?
No, I didn't. I'm just and you know, of course, people can debate forever and ever and ever, but of all the boxers I saw, I mean, I just, it's just, That's just my opinion.
Who would you have liked to have seen Ali fight? You know, there was a lot of talk. In fact, they did a simulation of him fighting the undefeated Rocky Marciano. Rocky lost his life in a plane crash. But the fight I would have liked to have seen, Mike Tyson in his prime versus Muhammad Ali. That would have been fascinating.
I think Ali's speed was what separated him. His speed and coordination was exceptional. You know, I mean, it was just amazing. But when he wouldn't fight for his country, that made me mad. When he became a black Muslim,
that made me mad. Have you rethought that? Have you thought, well, you know what? Maybe we shouldn't have been in Vietnam.
All of that bluster, all of that stuff, all that trash talk, as the years go on and things just sort of sift out, you can see the truth in many, many things that he was saying. And I just had this thought this morning, just at the beginning of your show, that I see an analogy with Trump, because I'm inclined not to like the guy. You know, I don't think rich people should flaunt their money, right?
Right. You know, it's like this Senate race that I'm going to tell you how I'm leaning. It's when you watch the fight, and I did watch four of those guys compete the other day, you find yourself rooting for somebody or saying, yeah, I like that guy. It's like watching a boxing match between two guys you never heard of. After you watch a few rounds, you find yourself rooting for one guy or the other. And then there's a guy like Cassius Clay who became Muhammad Ali. Maybe you didn't like him at the start, but toward the end you started rooting for him.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely, yeah.
Well, it's
no
a great
question about it. And that's what happened to me with Trump. And I think that Trump has brought, you know, with all this bluster and talk and people say, that, well, that's inappropriate, he's brought things to light that nobody else would just ever talk about.
Right. Sort of like Muhammad Ali.
And if nothing else, that's of great value.
I agree, Tom. I got to get going because I have Mitch McConnell coming up. But apropos of a man dying out of nowhere, we all knew he was sick, but the death is sort of sudden. I hope and expect that Muhammad Ali, unlike Prince, that he had a will, that he made some plans. He's got a lot of daughters. In fact, my wife watches Mary Ali on a show called 60 Days In. And, you know, his children are fascinating. Layla Ali, another daughter, she became a boxer. He had a lot of children, and I expect some lawyers got involved and did some estate planning. What about you? If you drop dead tomorrow, do you have a will? Do you want the government deciding where your assets go, or would you prefer to make the decision? That's right. You need to make the decision. Why don't you call my lawyer, Michael Bailey? His Colorado law practice is exclusively on estate planning, tax law, and elder law. We understand why you put off making a will, but it's really easy with Michael Bailey. Doesn't cost a lot. He's an easy lawyer to talk to. I know, because Trish and I hired him. He came to us. You can go to his office if you want, but if you want to make it easy, have him come to you. He'll meet on weekends and evenings. If you're in a dispute with the IRS, he can handle that too. The initial consultations are complimentary, so why not call my estate lawyer, Michael Bailey, at the Michael Bailey Law Office? You'll always speak directly with an experienced attorney about your needs. Give him a call right now, 720-394-6887, 720-394-6887, or online at mblawllc.com. When we come back, we're going to have the United States Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell from Louisville, Kentucky. We'll talk about all the great issues of the day, but the death of the Louisville Lip, the guy from his hometown, what a coincidence, what an opportunity. We'll be right back with Mitch McConnell on 710 KNUS.
Hey, hope you join me on the Monday Dan Caplis Show. So much to talk about right now. All of these violent anti-Trump protesters, are they helping or hurting Trump's cause? And just a day ahead of the California primary, what's it going to mean for Hillary Clinton if she loses that? That and more on the Monday Dan Caplis Show.
The Dan Caplis Show, weekday mornings from 9 to 11, right after Peter Boyle's on News Talk 710 KNUS.
Do you have a family member who's getting older and can no longer be safely left alone? With Visiting Angels, America's Choice in Senior Home Care, your parents and older family members can continue living at home and not have to move into a nursing home. Experienced, compassionate caregivers provide assistance in hygiene, meal preparation, and light housework up to 24 hours per day at affordable rates. To restore your family's peace of mind, call Visiting Angels toll-free today at 877-374-LIVE or at visitingangels.com.
How do most people discover the blends of tea they like? Trial and error. But at Twinings of London, we believe in just trial. That's because we have 9 master blenders traveling the world to find the best teas, spices, and herbs for the perfect balance of taste, flavor, and aroma. With over 50 great tasting varieties, we wouldn't mind if you tried them all. Twinings of London. Teas that fit your every mood. Available at a store near you or twiningsusa.com.
Hi, it's Peter Boyles. I'm here with my friend Karen with the Fresh Fish Company. The Fresh Fish Company is open 33 years ago. Karen was right out of high school. We started being friends then, and here we are years later. When it comes to seafood, my 3 favorite words, delivered fresh daily. I love coming to the place. Karen, it's wonderful. It's on Hamden in the Tiffany Plaza.
And we love having you dine with us, Pete. Fresh is in our name for a reason. Fresh quality seafood is our specialty. We feature Mesquite Wood Grilling and offer Denver's largest seafood selection. We serve over 20 varieties of fresh fish, shellfish, and mouth-watering prime rib and steaks. Our specialties include live Maine lobsters, crab legs, and calamari. And you'll love our San Francisco-style sourdough bread.
The Fresh Fish Company, the place I bring my friends, bring my family. It's a great place for lunch. Karen, what's the best way to make a reservation?
Make reservations at thefreshfishco.com, or you can call us at 303-740-9556.
So come enjoy seafood delivered fresh daily at one of my favorite places, the Fresh Fish Company.
Wild Birds Unlimited.
This is Scott Minow with Wild Birds Unlimited, and my brother David and I want you to join us for Bird Talk every Saturday from noon to 1 right here on 710 KNUS. Bird Talk is presented by Wild Birds Unlimited, the best nature shop in the known universe for finding high-quality bird feeding supplies. On Bird Talk, you'll hear the latest news and fascinating interviews from world leaders on the topics of wildlife and conservation. We'll bring you tips on turning your yard into a wild bird haven. You'll hear lots of fun and entertaining topics from the backyard bird feeding specialists. Whether you want to or not, we invite your calls, questions, and observations naturally. Join the Minow Brothers on Bird Talk Saturdays from noon to 1 right here on 710 KNUS.
Wild Birds Unlimited, we bring people and nature together.
From the Colorado Business Roundtable Studios, this is News Talk 710, KNUS, Denver. Now, back to the Craig Silverman Show, News Talk 710, KNUS.
She said, let's change our luck. This
oh, boy, we've had Bagnell in the lounge. It's all spiffy. If you want good carpet cleaning, call Bagnell. Tell him Craig sent you 20% off your first visit. It's a gorgeous day. In fact, we have the air conditioning on in the lounge for Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell to join us. And we, of course, have windows by Gravina's of Littleton. We went to the Gravina's Window Center of Littleton to supply the windows for Craig's Lawyer's Lounge because we want to be energy efficient and increase the value of this beautiful lounge we have here. Make sure you go to the Gravina's Window Center of Littleton, especially with the weather 80 degrees today, 80s throughout the forecast, gets up to 93 on Thursday, 95 next Friday, 96 next Saturday. What about that air conditioning? You want it all seeping out through some bad windows, some vinyl windows? Why don't you go to the Gravina's Windows Center of Littleton and realize the energy savings, realize the increase in the equity in your house? You know, houses are selling like hotcakes, especially those with great windows like the Gravina's Window Center of Littleton sells. They are the exclusive carrier of Infinity for Marvin fiberglass windows. These windows last longer than the vinyl windows many people currently have, and these windows stand up to all of Colorado's crazy weather, including cold, heat, and hail. You know, Colorado has a lot of hailstorms. You want to save money with the weather, and these windows keep the heat and the money in your home and also the cool in your home. The Gravina's Window Center of Littleton's been doing a great job For over four decades, it's family-owned and operated by Jim and Gail and their seven kids. Their philosophy is sell a great window with great installation, great service. People will come back for more. Their showroom on Littleton Boulevard, just west of Broadway. Please tell them Craig sent you. Their website, windowsforyourhome.com. They are Gravina's. Let's go to the VIP line and welcome the United States Senate Majority Leader, Mitch McConnell. Senator McConnell, what a great privilege. I read your book, The Long Game, and I enjoyed it very much. Welcome to Denver, Colorado.
Yeah, glad to be with you. Thanks for your interest.
Well, I am interested in your life, and I always take interest in people who are attorneys as well. And I read your book, and I saw that you weren't that happy being a lawyer. You always had different ambitions. But nonetheless, you went to the University of Kentucky School of Law, and you get welcomed into a very special place.
The Craig Silverman Show welcomes you to Craig's Lawyers Lounge.
Now, this is a place where prominent attorneys come to kick back, relax, tell war stories, kick around current events. Mitch McConnell, tell everybody about your law school experience and how you worked for a bit at a law firm, but you always said, that's not really for me. It's throughout the start of your book. What's it like being a lawyer, and how did you make your decision in that regard?
Well, it was pretty easy for me. I wasn't very good at it. I thought I needed to find another line of work, so I went into something with no risk, like running for office.
Right, but don't you think that law school gave you a basic understanding of the Constitution and how society runs? And even if you decided practicing law is not for you, don't you think it benefited you during your many decades in the Senate?
Yeah, absolutely. And I've worked with a lot of lawyers, hired a lot of lawyers over the years, been involved in litigation on constitutional issues, and certainly it was a great background. And I always encourage young people, even if they don't think they're going to end up being, you know, sort of a litigator type lawyer, that it's a good background, good training.
Right. And then it allowed you to run for some position that's unique to Louisville, Kentucky. And we will talk about the Louisville Lip, Muhammad Ali, because your ties to Louisville are incredible. But Muhammad Ali is still the most famous person ever from Louisville. But you were the county judge and executor. That's an unusual position.
It's a weird title. In the South, the job evolved into being like the county executive, like the mayor of the county. In fact, I wasn't really a judge. So the term was confusing to everybody. And, you know, over the years, it evolved. But basically, what I was running a large municipal government. We had a police department and a jail. And so it was an administrative job, sort of like being a mayor.
But it was an elective office. And,
yeah, elected. But
early on in your life, you said, you know what? I want to be a United States senator. And darned if you didn't do it. It's kind of unusual for somebody to have those aspirations and achieve them.
Well, you know, I got kind of hooked on politics by running for office in school. You know, I was president of student council in high school and student bar association in law school. And got the chance to intern for a senator from Kentucky. It was an exciting time to be there. It was during the summer of 1964, the filibuster against the Civil Rights Bill that year. And I got a chance to watch somebody that I admired a great deal and said to myself, well, you know, I'm sure this is a real long shot, but I'm going to try to be like him, like we all seize on people when we're young that we admire. And amazingly enough, 20 years after being an intern in his office, I was sworn into the seat that he had held and defeated the guy who succeeded him after he retired. So it was it's been a great experience.
Well, let's back up to 1964 and that Civil Rights Act. I always am interested in how, in a memoir, the author handles his relationship with his parents. You love your parents, and your father, A.M., he spoke out in favor of the Civil Rights Act, and I imagine that had a profound effect on his son, Mitch McConnell.
It did. I mean, we were originally from the Deep South, Alabama, and where the resistance to the civil rights laws of the 60s was the strongest. But my dad was different. Even when we lived in the Deep South, he voted for Eisenhower, which, you know, there were no Republicans at all in the Deep South in those days. And he and my mother both were very enlightened, I think, on the civil rights, the whole civil rights issue and the battles that were going on in the 60s, which was pretty unusual for people who were children of the very Deep South, which is where we started off.
Right, and you lived for a while in Augusta, Georgia. That's a famous place. But you ended up in Louisville, and your heart is in Louisville, Kentucky. And you brought up 1964. Right then, Cassius Clay was at the height of his powers. He beat a boxer from Denver named Sonny Liston in an epic fight. What was it like in the early 60s to be in Louisville and have this native son of Kentucky doing all these things?
Well, you know, when you're in a fairly small state, you don't have a whole lot of famous people. We were always thrilled to have somebody who was well-known. Of course, he was a pretty controversial guy, as you know, a conscientious objector during the Vietnam War, and then he became a Muslim. And at that particular point, that was considered, you know, kind of controversial. But he wore well. People loved his humor and led an extraordinary life and becoming one of the best known, if not at one point or another, best known person in the whole world.
Didn't they just open up a museum for Muhammad Ali in Louisville?
Yeah, there's an Ali Museum in Louisville, and his humble house has been restored. And there were a lot of visitors, you know, who would come and have that experience, and we always welcome it. It's not quite as big as the Kentucky Derby is for us, but it certainly attracts an awful lot of people from around the world.
Well, that's fantastic to have you on a day the Louisville Lip dies. What do you think it's going to be like in Louisville for his funeral, and will the whole town turn out, and do you know when it's going to be?
I don't know what the arrangements are yet, but certainly it's a big deal. I think there's a lot of nonstop coverage on television and radio about his life, which he richly deserves.
Well, let's move on to some fascinating aspects of your book. You know, you did not end up practicing law, but you got involved in one of the most interesting legal fights, and it caused you to fight with some of your fellow Republicans, specifically John McCain. And that has to do with campaign finance reform, and Citizens United ends up being the case that determines things. Why did you get so involved in that fight, that First Amendment fight, and why have you put your reputation on the line battling for that?
Well, you know, it's kind of an arcane issue for most Americans, but I developed an interest in the subject of how you participate in supporting your favorite candidate, which is, for most people, giving them a contribution. And I taught part-time, you know, back when I was practicing law, a course in American political parties and elections. Got interested in not only later as a practicing politician, but as somebody who'd actually studied the subject. Ended up being involved in years of debates on the floor of the Senate in opposition to my good friend John McCain on the issue of government control of campaigns. Went all the way to the Supreme Court on a McCain-Feingold bill, lost that case 5-4. You mentioned Citizens United. I supported the position the Supreme Court ultimately held. It's a kind of an arcane issue to discuss on the radio, but basically it's the fundamental question is how much control should government have over the way we run for office and the way people participate. And I've always been in favor of the minimal amount of government restrictions, the maximum opportunity for citizens not only to support a candidate of their choice, but independently of candidates to express their views in any way they see fit, so that the discourse is not completely controlled by the media.
I'll tell you, Hillary Clinton and Bernie Sanders can't say enough how much they hate Citizens United. But it comes down to this, whether a corporation can use its money to advocate for a political position. And then when you think about the New York Times Corporation, and you think about Disney owning ABC and ESPN and how they get rid of Kurt Schilling when he says the wrong word. So I think that once people understand, oh, you mean those corporations would be affected too? It's untenable. It's unmanageable. Why should media corporations have power that other corporations don't?
You're absolutely right. And that's all Citizens United was about. just corporations. Individuals could already do whatever they wanted to with their own money, including spend it all. It was just about corporations, and all it did, as you pointed out, was to eliminate the media preference. Because in the past, there had been a carve-out. If you were a corporation that owned a media outlet, you could do anything you wanted to. But if you were a corporation that didn't, you couldn't. So all it did was level the playing field for corporate speech so that the New York Times no longer enjoys preferential treatment.
Right. And if people understand the issue, I think they'll side with Mitch McConnell. It's a tough one. We don't like big money controlling everything, but what are the options? And to me, free speech means free speech, and it means it for everybody. And Donald Trump has kind of proved you don't necessarily have to spend big money. Through the force of your personality, you can move mountains. Sort of like a guy named Cassius Clay who became Muhammad Ali. We've been talking before you came on that we see certain similarities between Trump and Ali, the way they would be outrageous, the way they'd insult their opponents, their braggadocio, their larger-than-life image. What do you think about that?
You know, that's an interesting observation. I hadn't thought about it that way, but Trump certainly is an unusual candidate, and I think that's what made him appealing to right-of-center voters. Now he's got an interesting challenge looking to the general election. You know, are the broader electorate, including independent voters and others, going to be attracted to the same style? I think what we have at the moment is two candidates, both of whom enjoy very high unfavorables. So my advice to voters is let's put aside the personalities and focus on what I think this election's really about. And I think it's this. If we're satisfied with where the country is now, if you like the last 8 years, you think this is as good as we can do, then you ought to vote for Hillary Clinton. But if you think America needs to take an entirely different direction and get it going again, Donald Trump is the alternative.
You're listening to Mitch McConnell, United States Senate Majority Leader. What an accomplished individual. To me, this election comes down to one other thing. You might not appreciate it, and we didn't meet or anything, but we were in the same room on March 3rd, 2015. I had the privilege of being in the United States Capitol in the chambers when Bibi Netanyahu spoke to a joint session of Congress. That was a powerful speech, and I'll tell you, the Denver Post again editorialized against a candidate, John Kaiser, who wants to replace Michael Bennett. And they said, oh, John Kaiser's out of line for ripping the Iran nuke deal as something that will lead Iran to get a nuclear weapon. Well, that's exactly what Bibi Netanyahu said. And for the Michael Bennett's and the Denver Post of the world, it says, don't worry about it. We are worried about it. To me, when you have trouble deciding who to vote for in this upcoming election, who was for the Iran nuke deal and who was against it? Michael Bennett was for it. Mitch McConnell was against it. I like Mitch McConnell. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I think it was a big mistake to support it. Fortunately, even though we voted on it, it's still only an executive agreement, not a treaty. So a new president can completely undo it if he chooses to. But I was perplexed by Bennett's vote in favor of the Iran agreement. All the Republicans opposed it. We thought it was a bad mistake. I think it's given, in effect, Iran a signing bonus by lifting the sanctions and had little or no long-term impact on their ability to go forward with a nuclear program and no impact at all on all the other activities they're involved in, you know, building IEDs that have killed our soldiers and all their other efforts to export extremism all over the Middle East.
I was in the room with you when Benjamin Netanyahu spoke. You're there all the time, but was that a special day for you?
It was. Yeah, he's an outstanding leader. He's as close to Winston Churchill as we have in the world today. Forceful, articulate. The Israelis are lucky to have a prime minister of that caliber.
Well, we took note that when you went to Israel later in March, that Bibi Netanyahu stood at your side and said nice words about you. And this is what you had to say that day.
Bibi, Mr. Prime Minister, let me add on our behalf. First, we were all extraordinarily impressed with your address to the joint session a few weeks ago. Number two, I want to assure all Israelis that the U.S.-Israel relationship is still, no matter what's been said in recent weeks, in very, very strong shape on a bipartisan basis in the U.S. Congress.
Boy, I liked when you said that. And you said that you were perplexed by Michael Bennett's vote. We would use a different P word, and that would be pissed at Michael Bennett, because he undercut a lot of Colorado supporters, people who thought that he was on the side of Israel, but turned out he was on Team Obama. And I'll tell you, it was very disappointing, and that's why a lot of us feel he needs to be replaced as the United States Senator. Have you been following this campaign out in Colorado?
Yeah, I know you don't have a nominee yet, but I've certainly been following the competition. We hope to be able to compete in Colorado. Obviously, that'll depend on getting a candidate who has a shot at winning.
In your book, you write about how Colorado blew it in 2010 with the help of the Senate Conservative Fund. What were you talking about there in 2010, and why do you have such animus for the SCF, the Senate Conservative Fund?
Well, the Senate Conservatives Fund has been endorsing people who, if they win the primary, can't win in the general. We lost three seats in 2010, one there in Denver, with candidates who were unable to appeal to a broader audience in November.
Ken Buck.
We lost two in 2012 in Indiana and Missouri, with candidates who were unable to appeal to a larger audience. And so in 2014, we took a different strategy and competed with the Senate Conservatives Fund everywhere they backed a candidate, and defeated them in every primary in 2014, and that's why we have a new majority. And, of course, your outstanding Senator Cory Gardner was a part of all that. And, you know, it reminds everybody that the only way you can make policy is actually win the election. So the nominating process, in order to work for us, needs to produce nominees who can actually win in November. Otherwise, you've wasted your time.
Who's behind the Senate Conservative Fund? You know, they were just in the news in Colorado because they have committed to a candidate, Daryl Glenn, El Paso County Commissioner, and he is their selection. Do you know anything about Daryl Glenn?
I don't, but I can tell you, in Indiana, about a month ago, there was a primary between a Senate Conservatives Fund nominee and Congressman Todd Young, the other candidate, and the candidate of the Senate Conservatives Fund tried to make me an issue in the Indiana Senate primary. He lost by 34 points. So, you know, yeah, I think any candidate who signs up with the Senate Conservatives Fund has to wonder whether that's a smart strategy.
Well, who's behind the SCF? It used to be Jim DeMint. Is he still the guy there?
It was Senator DeMint originally, but it continues. I'm not sure who's running it now. But they have an outstanding record of defeat. And you got to wonder whether any candidate who is running a smart campaign would want to sign up with those guys. It's sort of like a ticket on the Titanic.
Well, I love that part of your book where your wife, Elaine, comes in and says, somebody has captured you perfectly, Mitch. You're not that charismatic. You're not great looking. You don't sound wonderful. But you're the best strategist in Washington. And she took it as a compliment, and I guess you did too, since you put it in your memoir.
Yeah, you know, you got to have a sense of humor in this business.
I know it is, especially when the president cracks jokes like this at your expense.
Why don't you get a drink with Mitch McConnell, they ask. Really? Why don't you get a drink with Mitch McConnell?
That's what I love, the way you have a thick skin, and you write about it in your book. If you're going to get into a business like yours, you need a thick skin. And does that bother you at all that Barack Obama's cracking wise about you?
Well, you know, I've had my fun at his expense as well. In the book, you may recall, I pointed out I watched the whole inning of baseball one time while he was lecturing on the phone. He's like every kid you had in class coming along who, you know, thought he was the smartest guy in the class and wanted to make sure everybody knew it. So the president does indeed engage in a good deal of lecturing. I've heard Democrats complain about it as well. And it's particularly grating, I think, when he wastes a lot of time trying to convince you of things you know he has no chance of convincing you of. He's a smart guy. He's kind of a unique political figure, but not Not a great negotiator, shall I say.
Well, let's talk about his potential successor, Hillary Clinton. You worked with her in the Senate. What are your thoughts about Hillary Clinton? And while we're at it, why don't you take on Bernie Sanders, another one of your colleagues?
Well, I would say, you know, about Senator Sanders, he's a socialist. Does America really want to elect a socialist? I mean,
I don't.
Goodness, I think the president has done a lot to turn us into a Western European country. Big debts, high taxes, overregulation, slow growth. You elect a socialist, that'd finish the job for sure.
I know it. And so, when the Democrats say, Bernie, why don't you give it up, come back to the party, he was never even a member of your party.
Well, not officially. He caucuses with them. And it's stunning to me that in America, a country built on free enterprise and capitalism, that an avowed socialist is getting this much support. I mean, it shows you how much President Obama has moved the country to the left. With regard to Hillary Clinton, look, I think her policies would be indistinguishable from what we've experienced the last 8 years. Exactly the same thing. You know, the overregulation, the slow growth, the lack of future for the country. And if we, you know, if we really want to turn America around, four more years like the last eight, it doesn't strike me as the direction we ought to take.
You know, you guys in the Senate seem to argue about everything, but there wasn't an argument when it came to a vote about releasing those 28 pages from the 9/11 report. What can you tell us about that, Majority Leader McConnell? Did you support the release of those 28 pages, and have you read them? What's going on there?
Yeah, I can't really add anything on that subject.
But do you support the release of the 28 pages or not?
Yeah, I really just don't have anything to add on that subject. Why don't we move on to
okay,
another?
Okay, we will. You know, I like the pictures in your book, the one in 1962 with you as president of the Young Republicans sitting there with Barry Goldwater, who responded to your invitation. What did you think about that? Was that had to be sort of like me having you on my show right now, a magical moment for
well,
you?
I was shocked. I obviously subsequently learned out he was in Louisville for another purpose, but he needed some public event, and we got lucky. He tagged on a speech at the University of Louisville. I got to introduce Barry Goldwater as president of the College Republicans, and 2 years later he was the nominee for president. So it was quite an experience.
The other picture I got a big kick out of, and I can just picture you guys together, was you with George Will and Charles Krauthammer. I know you're all big baseball fans, and I think you share the same political philosophies, but unlike you, at least for George Will, not necessarily for Charles Krauthammer, but he's a never-Trumper. What do you say to the never-Trumpers out there, including people who are your friends?
Well, look, I think this is the choice. I guess if you don't like the choice, you could skip it. But I don't see sitting out as an option. And the Republican primary voters decided they wanted an outsider. And Trump was the only Dr. Carson was an outsider, too. But the two of them were the two completely different kinds of candidates. And I think we need to respect the wishes of the voters, even though you may fantasize about having some other choice. This is the choice. This is how it turned out. And the choice is going to be between Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump. And the question is, are we happy with where we are in America today, or we want to go in a different direction? So I would, you know, say to my friends who are swallowing Trump pretty hard, this is a choice.
What about David French? He's a man of the South, a lawyer. I expect you might know him. Is that
actually? I don't know him, and I would say this whole third party effort can only, if it takes off, can only help elect Hillary Clinton. And I really wouldn't want, on my conscience, as a conservative, that I did anything to help put Hillary Clinton in the White House.
Finally, Senator McConnell, I really appreciate talking to you. And one thing you can help people that's not necessarily political, you've had health battles in your life. When you were 2 years old, You contracted polio. It's such a moving story about how your mother made all the right moves to give you a good life, and thank God polio didn't affect you too badly. But then at the height of your powers, you had you failed a stress test. You had to have a triple bypass. What advice would you give to people who might be hurting out there and dealing with their own triple bypass or health problem? How did you get through it?
Well, look, you know, we all have challenges in life. The biggest one I had was, as you indicated, at a very early age, contracting polio at age two. My mother, my dad was overseas fighting the Germans in World War II. My mother was left with this challenge. It affected my left leg. We were fortunate to be an hour's drive from Warm Springs, Georgia, where Franklin Roosevelt set up a polio treatment center. They taught her how to do exercises on my left leg, and after two, and told her not to let me try to walk, because they were afraid if I tried to walk prematurely, I'd end up in a brace the rest of my life. She administered that like a drill sergeant for 2 years, and my first memory in life was the last visit there, where the nurses told my mother they thought I was going to be a normal little boy and I wouldn't have to wear a brace or even have a limp. So I had an early, early lesson in overcoming adversity, and most of us have problems that we run into, whether health or other things. And I always tell students that I spend a lot of time with, the only way to fail in America is to quit or die. Don't give up. There are always setbacks, but the sun still comes up tomorrow, and in this great country of ours, there are always second chances.
I loved your book. I liked your perspective. I think that's valuable for anybody. There are few people who make a plan as a young person and then fulfill it. Do you have any aspirations beyond Senate Majority Leader?
This is the job I always hoped for, and I hope we'll still have a Senate Republican majority next year. We're going to find out this fall, and Colorado could be a big part of continuing our Senate Republican majority.
Well, it's fantastic that you joined us today, Senator. I hope you enjoyed your experience in Craig's Lawyer's Lounge.
Thanks for the opportunity.
My pleasure. That was Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell. What did you think about that? How about his refusal to answer about this 28 pages involving Saudi Arabia? I think his refusal to answer is pretty darn interesting. Let's talk about these things when we come back on 710 KNUS.
Where do the candidates stand on economic issues critical for Coloradans? Find out when 710 KNUS and Americans for Prosperity Colorado present an economic forum for Colorado's Republican senatorial candidates Friday, June 10th at 7 p.m. at the